Welcome to the Antimatter Radio Show, coming to you live from southern Indiana, where the Appalachian Mountains start near the Kentucky-Indiana border. That's where I'll be doing the show for you today from this wonderful place. I'm at a beach enjoying beautiful mountains. So today's show, I'd like to talk about some of the same topics that we've been talking about through the previous shows. I'd like to start off with talking about telementation. As all of you know, my new book is out on Amazon.com. It's $9 on Amazon.com. And it's about the greatest force in the universe, and that is the force of consciousness to create reality, physical reality. Now, there's many more realities other than just physical reality, of course. Physical reality is just one of many realities that exist. In fact, our very own Earth is home of many worlds, but our consciousness only typically is in the egotistical state and only sees one consciousness, only sees the egotistical consciousness and therefore only sees physical matter, does not see light matter, divine matter, and the non-physical divine realm. So, on this show, we'd like to discuss realms other than the material realm. Because the material realm is either one of two things, either not real or it is less real than the spiritual realm, such as the immaterial energy that composes apparently all of the universe. That's where telementation comes in. Telementation is a divine force which exists deep inside all of you. And the unfortunate thing is all of you have been taught that this force does not exist. The way you've been taught that is that you've never been told about it. So therefore, you've grown up with your public school education and your education from the churches and the TV, thinking that there is no such super powerful force, religious power, residing deep within your consciousness. You've learned to think that your consciousness is nothing special. Your brain is the most complex entity in the known universe. You have, for example, neurotransmitters, which are chemicals that transmit across synapses in your brain, and there's 1,000 different ones. And there's more connections between synapses in your brain than there are particles in the physical universe. You should all ponder that for a moment, that astounding fact. So therefore, the brain is the most complicated entity that humans know of. It has many special chemicals, electrochemical ingredients to it, such as the popular ones are known as dopamine, serotonin. Those are actually not very readily available in the brain compared to other neurotransmitters. They're just made popular because that's what the pharmaceutical industry wants you to focus on, because those are what are concerned with antidepressant drugs. They respond to antidepressant drugs. Those basically untested experimental drugs that are being consumed by anywhere between 20 to 30% of the American population. So the only reason, just as a side note, the only reason that people take those is because they think they feel depressed, they feel blah and humdrum. The only reason people feel that way is because humans are living in an environment that they are not suited to. They are working at jobs that they hate. They are away from their families. They are not spiritually fulfilled. They are not taking part in religious practice. They are not farming. They are not in a scene such as I am in right now on this beach in southern Indiana, where I am currently overlooking Blue Mountains and a huge lake. And I'm surrounded by ants and bees and hummingbirds and grasses and clover and rocks. And this is what a human's made for. It's very easy to become centered and find out what you're really made of and what you're really all about, what your super consciousness is really up to when you're in a place like this. But we humans are not in places like this. We're in factories, and we're in big cities, and we're in malls, and we're in front of the TV. And we become, we're out of place in those environments, in those settings, in those scenarios. And we therefore become dejected. We become confused and sad. And therefore we think, oh, the problem is with us. The problem is with my brain. You know, somebody on TV tells you, oh, the problem isn't your environment you're in. The problem isn't the setting that you're in. The problem is your brain. And there's no evidence for that. Nobody ever presents any evidence for that. It's very unscientific, to say the least. And, but nevertheless, people believe it, and the pharmaceutical industry makes billions and billions and billions off of it. So the correct way to live is according to telementation, this superpower that exists within all of you, and that, unfortunately, basically all of you have been tricked into not knowing exists. And it's what you are. It composes you. It's your deepest, true core of being, of what you are. And nevertheless, you have no clue that it's there because we live in a despiritualized culture. With telementation, you can literally restructure your consciousness to create the world. Some people think, oh, how could that be? How could it be the case that consciousness creates the world? Well, it's very easy to describe, as I do in my book, how that can be the case. And furthermore, quantum physics has proven this to be the case. The Copenhagen interpretation of quantum physics is a set of interpretations about quantum particles, the tiny particles that make up all of known reality, these little pieces of irreducible energy. The irreducible pieces being electrons and muons and quarks and so forth. These basic building blocks of reality. Your consciousness is composed of the same stuff as those. Okay? Your consciousness is composed of energy for reasons I discussed on last week's show. And the particles that make up everything are also energetic, just like your consciousness. They're both non-physical. I have an article I published, one of my last academic works I published, called Neurological Nihilism, which I published in a journal, a philosophy of science journal called Axiomatis. It's available, you can read it free on my website if you'd like, which is, my website is antimatterradio.com. Just go to writings and publications and go to the academic areas and you'll see the article in there. That article gave over 100 pages of an account of why quantum particles are non-physical. That's not a very controversial position. That's very widely held in universities and outside of universities. There's nothing to be controversial. The reason is things that are material do things like take up space, move around, have three dimensions, they exist through time, and so forth. Those are all the qualities of material entities. Okay, but the problem is when you go and study quantum particles, they don't have any of those qualities. They have all the opposite qualities. They have the opposite qualities of matter. They don't exist through time. They don't take up space. They don't move around in any. They move around in what the Buddhists often call a staccato way. They flash in and out of existence, that is. And they don't have any of the qualities you would want something to have if you're going to call it a material entity. So the best thing to do is to call it non-material, obviously. Now, interestingly, your consciousness operates and exists in exactly the same non-material way. So therefore, our best thesis is to say that consciousness and the quantum reality that composes the universe are the same order of stuff, quote-unquote stuff. So therefore, we can make the very unrisky, simple thesis that the two of these types of stuff, consciousness and quantum particles, can interact in somehow, some way. They can influence each other. Now, nobody really knows how, for example, quantum particles influence each other, but we nevertheless know that they do. Nobody just knows how they do. And so therefore, we can't explain how these non-material stuff interact. We can just explain that they do. And telementation is the theory that your consciousness interacts with quantum particles. Now, I just said it's a theory, and that's true. But it is an experimental science, or at least, let's say, put it this way, as I do in my book, it could be an experimental science. It's unfortunately, academics just don't really pay attention or care or don't take the time to study it. They'll all line up and say, oh, something like that doesn't exist. And the physics department, they may say that it exists, and they may argue for something like fermentation. But all the other academic departments, biology and economics and psychology and anthropology and so forth, they'll all line up and tell you, oh, that's crazy, you're weird if you think something like fermentation exists. But they've never taken the time to study it. They can't, if you ask them to prove their claims, they'll have nothing to say. And they're basically just doing more non-analytical assuming that academics so often do. But the bottom line is, as I was saying, fermentation can easily be an experimental, empirical science, just in any college or university department as big as psychology or physics or economics, if academics just were able to study it. Now, I shouldn't blame the academics too much. They're largely controlled, of course, by the big corporate giants who fund the universities, and then the universities tell them what to study. All of you have known people who work in universities who run around trying to get grants. Oh, I got to get a grant. I got to write a proposal for a grant. Blah, blah, blah. I hope it gets accepted. What they're doing is they're trying to get someone to give them money is what they're doing. And they have to write up a proposal for research, which is appealing and can be approved of by these money bags. So they can't, if they came and said, I want to do research on telemetation, almost nobody's going to fund that because the big corporate giants that run the universities and the big government giants that run the universities, of course, the corporations run the government, so it's all back to the corporations. They simply don't want, they want to study things like nuclear bombs and how to build, toxic, you know, deadly viruses and things like this. So if we want to learn about things like telemetation, we have to do it ourselves as citizens. That's, you know what, that's the way it should be anyway. That's why I wrote a book, and that's why all of you can do research. You can listen to my free radio shows on telemetation on antimatterradio.com, or you can buy my book if you want. We all can do that. We don't need to depend on, you know, a government giving us permission to study this stuff or throwing money at a university or something. We can study this stuff ourselves, and that's the way it should be. Do you think the Native Americans out there doing their rain dance really cared about getting government funding or something? And the rain dance is, by the way, a telementational ritual. Manly P. Hall, who's one, as many of you know, is one of my favorite philosophers, and a lot of you know I don't share the same opinion about Freemasons that so many people share. I think they're basically an irrelevant group, not some conspirator of world government. Now, the Illuminati has hijacked the Freemasons, but the Illuminati and the Freemasons in general are different entities. So, anyway, back to Manly P. Hall, he discussed how the rain dance was all the people of the village getting together, the Native American village, and carrying out a ritual where their minds would work in such a way that they would telemetationally create a situation where there would be rain. So, telemetation is the ultimate technology. We've just learned, there's a book, I think it's called Weather Wars by Jerry E. Smith. He talks about how we've just learned in the last couple hundred years with our American technology how to create rainstorms and so forth. The Native Americans, they had better technology. They had telementational technology, and they could probably do it. Who knows how long ago they were doing it? They could have been doing it thousands of years ago. So they're clearly much more advanced than we are because there's a good, in the first Star Wars movie, there's a good saying by Darth Vader. Darth Vader says, the ability to destroy a planet is insignificant next to the power of the Force. And he's saying that to his secret government cronies as they're planning to destroy planets and feel all powerful because they've built this technological apparatus called the Death Star, which is the most powerful weapon they've ever known, and which they have had built for them. They can do destructive operations. The thing that's fascinating is Darth Vader knows that that technology is nothing compared to the real technology, which is telementation, the power of consciousness, which is the universe. What is the universe? You want a definition of the universe? The universe is consciousness and particles interacting. And consciousness may just be the particle. There may be just, because that definition sort of assumes that there's two types of stuff. There's the particle stuff and then the consciousness stuff. But of course, those are, as we've already said in this show, it's not clear that those are different types of stuff. They're the same order of stuff. So it may just be that the particles are all pieces of consciousness. Or put in the other way, it could just be that our consciousness is just the quantum particles that are everywhere. So that basically gets us to a philosophical position that consciousness is everywhere. So as I sit here on this hill above a beach in southern Indiana, overlooking these mountains and this lake, I would want to say that everything I see is the stuff of consciousness, is made of consciousness. It's not made of matter. It's not made of colors and sounds and so forth. It's first and foremost what it is the immaterial stuff of consciousness. And that would be synonymous with saying it is the immaterial energy, bits of energy that are called quantum particles. So that's a philosophical position which I don't want to explore too much. But it is interesting how when one gets into serious meditation, Buddhist meditation, Hindu meditation, Christian mysticism, something really introspective, really intense, where you're really getting to the inner core of your nirvanic self. The deepest inner core of you is called nirvana. It exists at the center of your consciousness. It's covered up by other layers of consciousness. The outermost layer is called the egotistical layer. It sort of covers up everything else, the inside, so you can't see it. But when you start doing serious meditation, you start to find that your consciousness is, you have this feeling that when you look out at the blue mountains and the lake and the trees and the bumblebees and the hummingbirds all around me, that they are not distinct from my states of feeling and perceiving going on within my subjectivity. That is a very real realization that comes to people when they get into serious, inwardist, introspective, contemplative meditation in any of these traditions that I just listed. And all the philosophy leads to the same. That article I just referred to a while ago that I published in the journal called Axiomatics, one of my last academic, my strictly professional academic work, gets to the same conclusion, which is that the only way to make sense out of reality is to collapse the world and the experience you're down into one entity. Not one system, because a system can have two parts interacting. What you want to do is you want to consider them one entity. The way I describe it in that article is to think of all quantum particles that compose reality are indistinguishable from one another. They are all irreducible bits of infinitely simple divine energy. And our consciousness is somehow indistinguishable from that. And clearly, I don't just say that as an assumption in this paper. I have 175 pages of philosophical reasoning, intense scientific research cited in the paper to get to that conclusion. And clearly, if that conclusion is the case, then we humans, we don't understand reality in a sufficient way. Reality is operated in a way that we don't fully understand. The stuff that makes up everything, that including ourselves, is not well understood by us. Or perhaps it's the case that our minds have been clouded and complicated, and we think that what reality is complicated. Like as if it's a 747 jet airplane, which got lots of parts that all interact, and it's so complicated we can't even think about it. Maybe that's not how reality really is, because when you go down to the more fundamental level, things get simpler and simpler until it becomes infinitely simple. And it's the same when you delve deep into your consciousness in meditation. The deeper and deeper you go, the simpler things become, in an analogous way to when you probe into the heart of matter to get to the non-matter, which is the quantum reality. So, And then also interesting things happen at that deep meditative core of you. You become incredibly intelligent with this meditation. And all these people are out there taking smart pills and trying to read books and doing this and that to try to become smart. And I'll, of course, read my share of books. But if you meditate to such a sufficient degree, you'll have this feeling that you know everything. That there's nothing outside of your grasp. It's hard to explain because we're talking, and this language we use is egotistical level of consciousness language. It's an egotistical technology, language called English that we use. Some like Walter Cruttenden theorized that back in the higher ages, the golden ages of Earth, the reason things weren't written down back then is because writing and speech and language, Walter Cruttenden, of course, by the way, is the person who wrote the book Lost Star, which I've talked about in almost every show. But he theorizes that the reason people weren't writing things down back then is because people were at a higher order state of being, one that we can't even really understand from our egotistical cultural consciousness that we all subsist within currently. We can't even begin to imagine how the peoples of the past golden ages lived. Now, clearly, these people were more advanced. We've got the evidence of the archaeological artifacts that they built, which I've discussed on almost every previous show of the Antimatter radio show. So we know that they were there. We know that these people were more advanced than us. And we can't even begin to understand what they were up to, how their consciousness was working, and so forth. So it may be the case that while we humans sit here in 2009 thinking we're so smart, and even though we can't even, our universities don't even tell us really anything about our past, they act like, it's just, there was civilizations and called Greece and Rome, and then you go back a little further, it was Babylon, and then that was it. And then we're just monkeys in the forest 5 million years ago. That's not very advanced, okay? We are a very unadvanced civilization. I know that's hard to believe because we're all told on the Discovery Channel that we're so advanced and we're becoming so, with all our technology, becoming so advanced and so impressive. Well, if we were, then why can't we build the Giza Pyramid? Why can't we figure out how to build Baalbek, which is a monument in Lebanon, which I've talked about on past shows? Because our ancestors could, and they did it all over the world. All over the world, but we can't do it. So I think the evidence is clear. We're not very advanced. We're pretty pathetic. We can't even get a government that's democratic in any way or constitutionalist here in America. So it's not very impressive. Furthermore, humans are probably at a crossroads right now, though. We've got a lot of discussion about 2012, and it certainly does seem like something is going on. You've got activity with the Earth's magnetic field, and the governments of the world are really heating up for a global collapse. And the sun is doing some very strange things. The politicians are just out of control, running amok, insane, as if they're preparing for some sort of total meltdown of global order. What's left? Global order to them is, of course, mass slavery everywhere. But it appears that, it's hard to explain all of this in a short one-hour radio show. But if you throw away the history that you've been taught in your public school education, in your churches, and you just look at the facts that our ancestors were more advanced, as we've talked about, all the evidence we've given on this show in the past, then it becomes clear that there are cycles. Our ancestors were less advanced and became more advanced and built things like Baalbek and the Giza Pyramid and the Mayan pyramids and all these monuments that are underwater worldwide. I'll talk about those in just a second. And then we descended again Greece and Rome were dissension periods, and then the Dark Ages. No, it's not really clear historically exactly what's going on in the Dark Ages. And then here we are ascending again. So that trajectory would sort of imply to us that we are in an ascending phase now. So it would appear, what is the definition of an ascending phase? Well, as Cruttendon explains in Lost Star, it's changes in consciousness. A technology, technological changes just follow that. So it would appear that we are in an ascending state of global consciousness. And I can see it. I can feel it within myself. I can see it. I can feel. I really pay very close attention to my own consciousness, of course, since I'm a active Buddhist meditating every day. And I can see myself becoming more, let's say, psychically powerful through, you know, week to week. And things happen that surprise me. I can do things that I haven't been able to do just recently. And then I hear about all these changes through history, all the things going on now, and I see patterns, and I can kind of get a picture of where we're going, as Cruttendon explains in this book, Lost Star. And there could be an optimistic future for it. I know that things don't look real good right now because we've got this control global government forming, and they're threatening us with concentration camps and everything else. But I think that the better theory of what's going to happen is the real power of the universe, which is consciousness, is going to, let's say, explode in a way that will surprise all of us. And then, therefore, technology will explode in return. That's what I theorize is going on. For all the reasons I've explained on past shows and a little bit here on this show. So the engine of that is telemetation. That is, to my knowledge, the ultimate force of consciousness. It is the base nature of consciousness. All of your problems in life can cease with telemetation. I don't mean to sound infantile and childish by saying that, because it's sort of become trendy and fashionable in our culture to say, oh, problems are always with you, and you always have problems, and you get through them, the tough times are there, blah, blah, blah. Are we sure about that? Or is that just a product of an unenlightened, non-advanced culture? I'd say it's that. It's the second. There was my life before I discovered telemetation. There was my life after. And my life after is almost, I wouldn't have even understood my life before I discovered telemetation in the after stage. I would have had, if you would have described it to me, I would have laughed and said, that's not possible. That's not how humans can live. But there's virtually anything that you can accomplish with telemetation is within your grasp, as long as it's not something logically impossible. So, telemetation is the product, simply, of a more advanced state of consciousness than the egotistical state. It's within all of you now. Just right under the surface, right under the cracks of that egotistical shell. What is the egotistical shell? So it's called your personality. It's all these little shallow desires you have, and all these little, it's all these little fears. That fear is the cornerstone, is the rock, the foundation of the ego consciousness. Okay? It is the antithesis of telementational true consciousness. Fear state is the epitome of the false self, false consciousness. The exact opposite of the true self, telementational you. There's so many reasons why that's the case. But basically, let me just back up a little bit here. Telementation is a natural state that you reside within at all moments, whether you know it or not. It is a process, for lack of a better word, of some sort, of your deep inner feelings, deeper than your egotistical surface feelings. Those feelings creating the world about you. And I cannot underestimate how powerful this force is and how real this force is. You can become, I know it's hard for many of you to believe because you've been taught that reality is controlled by a philosophy called cause and effect. And that's what creates the world we live in. Causes lead to effects, and those lead to more effects, and everything's just sort of random and unplanned and spontaneous, and here we are. That is absolutely not how reality works, and you can prove it by learning telementation. So what telementation is, it's not really, I think I've described it as being something you have to learn. Well, that's true. But really, the learning that you have to do is you have to just learn to become yourself. Okay, because you've got this thing that's clouded you, this thing that's concealed you, called the egotistical consciousness. And that's basically a consciousness called your personality, which is made up of you being afraid of things, your false ideas about the world that you've been taught at church and at school and on TV. It's composed of you trying to impress people, you trying to be smart and be the top person in the classroom or on the football team. All these things that don't matter and aren't even real. That's what the egotistical consciousness is. What meditation is, whether it's Hindu meditation or Buddhist meditation or Christian mysticism or what, is the process of destroying the ego, really. And it's sometimes scary to people to do that, because you can get to a point in your life where the ego is all you've ever known. All you know is this little shallow thing called the personality. You think that's what you are. So if you practice meditation and start to destroy it, it can be a little scary conceptually, because this idea of what you are fades away. But what also happens in meditation is you find out that the deeper, true, genuine, real you, beneath those cracks in the ego shell, is composed of infinite freedom. That's its definition. Infinite joy, infinite freedom. And you become drunk and addicted to this real you, this happiness that is bubbling and exploding within you. And you won't know what I'm talking about right now unless you practice meditation. And once you get a taste of it, you will not want to do anything but keep going. It's not a struggle. Meditation is not a struggle. I describe how to do all of this in my book, step by step by step. It's not a struggle. It's a relaxation technique. It's comfort. And it becomes more enjoyable than anything else that you want to do. You start to look forward to it at night after work or whatnot, being able to practice these exercises, this meditations, religious spirituality training. And then you find out that the real self has these powers. And the one that I focus on is telementation. It's not clear how telementation is different than, for example, telepathy or clairvoyance, especially clairvoyance. They do seem to be all related, from what I can tell, all part of one system of consciousness. I used to think telementation and telepathy were different, but that is clearly not the case. Same with clairvoyance. Clairvoyance is something that is also, therefore, the bedrock of your consciousness. Just, unfortunately, people have been taught that it doesn't exist, and it's not real. So, but as I was saying earlier, I grew up where people have told me, oh, if you want a lot of money, you have to work for it. And you're never, not everybody gets it, and you'll be lucky to get me, and most people are poor. Well, that's only true in a culture that doesn't know about telemitation. And a culture that knows about it and practices it, everybody's wealthy. And there's never a lack of wealth. Now, wealth, of course, comes in many forms, but mainly what I'm thinking here as wealth is having very suitable living conditions, having very suitable education, having safety and food that empowers you and makes you extremely healthy. That's wealth, okay? That's what I'm referring to. Of course, that translates to money in many ways in our culture. So the human in our culture believes that that's not how things are. You have always have poor people, and you always have suffering, you always have war. Humans are violent and lost. People may not put it in exact those terms, but this is roughly what people, if you start to ask them what do they think about humans, what are humans all about, this is roughly what they will tell you. And it's simply the product of a lack of education. Okay? So a little while ago I said I wanted to discuss the monuments and pyramids and so forth that are underwater all over the world. If you study archaeology in the university, they will tell you about certain monuments, you know, the pyramids, maybe they'll touch on a little bit. We'll talk about some tombs here and there and some Native American mounds in Ohio and things like that. But they will ignore something utterly amazing, and that is the following. Worldwide, off the coast of all of our continents, India, Spain, Japan, Mexico, Africa, all over the place, there are submerged under between 80 and 120 feet of water, palaces, pyramids, stone temples, and so forth, built with the same kind of technology that the pyramids in the Yucatan Peninsula or in Egypt are composed of, clearly showing a likelihood of a common culture, a world government, a world culture that existed back during that time when those were constructed. So it's just astonishing. These monuments are well known to exist. There's even one university professor at the University of Boston, I think his name is Robert Schlock. He works a lot with John Anthony West, who covers a lot of these topics. And John Anthony West is an incredible author. It's as if the whole history of the world is underwater, right there for us all to see, but everybody's ignoring it. And what does the history of the world tell us? It tells us that sometime between 1000 BC and 3000 BC, there was a teeming world, maybe even back to 5,000 or 6,000 BC. It's hard to tell these days. So let's just say somewhere between 1,000 BC and 10,000 BC. The dates aren't really so important to get exactly right, just that we know this culture, world culture existed back then. All of you can go online and study this. You can study, look up underwater Japanese, underwater palace Japan or something like that on Google. And you'll and also look up Graham Hancock. He's got a good site, which has a lot of pictures of it. You can all go and look up all these monuments and temples and pyramids and so forth that are underwater worldwide that universities won't even talk about. The Discovery Channel has started discussing them a little bit. Not much, and they usually do it in very slanted and poor detail. But it's as if the whole history of the world is submerged, and as I was just about to say, it tells us that sometime between 1000 and 10,000 BC, there was this world culture, incredibly advanced, more advanced than we are, that's for sure, because they were building monuments that we couldn't build today. and they all submerged underwater as if there was a sea level increase. And a lot of people think that the end of the last ice age, about 9,000 BC or so, when all the ice caps in the northern half of the world melted, raised the sea level, you know, 100 feet or something, that that could have submerged all these coastal cities globally. That's a pretty good theory, but it is a theory. So what this tells us is that our global civilization we have now, with impressive monuments and buildings and whatnot, is just one of many. This has happened before. This is nothing new. And we're just going around in another cycle of it right now. And curiously, you can develop a lot of conspiracy theory with this. I say that in a positive sense, as a conspiracy theory is, of course, a positive research topic. Interestingly, now our politicians are talking about sea level rises and climate change and so forth. Of course, this always happens. It's very natural, as all of you know. Our politicians are just fear-mongering us. But it's just curious that that's the tool that they're using to fear-monger us. And you wonder if, you know, they've got the technology to melt Antarctica, and that would raise the sea level again. And maybe this is what they use to shift populations and create the change that they want, as they've done through thousands of years, this secret group of elites that have secretly controlled the world populations through the last thousands and thousands of years. So you wonder if they're just using the same technique over and over again to use global climate change and sea level rise then, that they either knew was coming because they knew that climate changes were coming, or they engineered climate changes. So it's as if they're planning to do that again. And, of course, Cliff High of HalfPatchHuman.com, he's the webbot guy who traces the language on the Internet. You can use that to make predictions, because psychically humans know about all these future events deep down in their consciousness clairvoyantly. You wonder if they've been doing the same attack over and over. I'm going to have to end the Antimatter Radio Show at this time. We'll continue next week. I'm going to continue my vacation here. And I look forward to talking to you all of you next week. We'll discuss more of these same topics again, including the one I just ended with. Thank you very much. Bye.